Hi, welcome to Visual Studio Toolbox. I'm your host, Robert Green, and joining me today is John Papa. Hey, John.
Hey. How's it going, man?
Good to get you back in the Tamline studio.
Thank you for having me.
Viewers may remember John Papa from such shows as The Silverlight Show and other things. John, of course, used to work at Microsoft and was one of the Channel 9 luminaries, and then went off into the real world, and you're back.
I am.
For the day.
I am, for the day. I visit once in a while.
Cool.
When they let me in the building.
Yep. And so you you moved from being all about Silverlight to being all about the web, right? Mm-hmm. Before we get into the topic of the day, which is Visual Studio Code.
Yes.
Give us just a brief overview of what your advice would be for somebody who was going to make that transition. Let's say somebody who had been doing, you know, WPF and XAML or WinForms or whatever was looking down the road and saying, you know what, I'm going to go become one of them web developers.
It's a tough transition, right?
Yes.
I mean, one of the hardest things to do, I've often said, is not learning your first language, it's learning your second,
mm-hmm.
whether it's spoken language or coding. You know, learning C#, that's your first. You can learn it, you get where it goes. Then you go to the second language, you're constantly comparing that to what you just learned.
Yep.
And if you did what WPF or ASP.NET or Silverlight or WinForms, or you're still doing those, it's hard to say, okay, now you're going to something else new. How do I make those connections? And some people will tell you, don't make the connections, break free and learn the new thing. That could be workable advice. But for me, I was constantly looking for anything I could hold on to,
mm-hmm.
to say, I used to have something to do with separation of concerns over here. How do I bring that to the web? I used to be able to do dependency injection. How do I bring that over here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do I take the things that I learned how to think about and apply them to new technology? And those are good skills regardless of what you're getting into.
Right.
So to me, I would suggest people think about, what did you lay all your technical knowledge on? What are those skills that you had? And be confident that you've got those. Dive into the new technology and learn one thing at a time.
Okay.
I call it concept count. If you try to learn 30 things at once, I mean, I can't do that. I don't know about you. I try to pick one or two at a time.
So what would be the ones that somebody would start with?
I would start with, well, one of two ways. If you really like .NET with C#, I mean C#, really. If you really like C#, I would take a look at TypeScript.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of synonymous concepts. I mean, let's say, to be honest here, Anders is the one who created both of them.
Right.
So he's got a lot of the things going into both those languages, and they look and feel very similar.
Okay.
So JavaScript's been likened by, to imagine you're driving across the Golden Gate Bridge, right? You're driving in your car. There's no guardrails. You could bounce off the side of that road, and what's going to happen? You're in the bay, right?
Mm-hmm.
JavaScript's like that. It says, I'm still going to connect both sides of the bay for you and let you get there, but you are free to drive into the bay anytime you like. C# or TypeScript is more like, I'm going to put the guardrails back up and help protect you a little.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you're looking for something synonymous, start with TypeScript. The other angle to look at is to just look at tools you don't know. Learn how to evaluate what's out there and say, okay, do I need to look at Node or Gulp? Do I need to look at WebStorm or VS Code or other tools?
Mm-hmm.
And pick one a week, just to explore for an hour or two and decide, and don't give it any more than that.
Okay.
Decide, hey, should I be looking at this and investing my time here or not? And make a list. But don't tackle 30.
Right. Cool. Good advice. All right. So you have recently become a convert over to Visual Studio Code.
Oh, yes.
And
yes.
That's what you're here to talk about today. We had Chris Dias on a couple months ago who did quite a long demo. It was really cool. But you're gonna show us Visual Studio Code, and we're gonna kind of focus on. He approached it. You know, obviously he's on the product team, so he approached
his product.
This is what we're building.
Yep.
You're gonna approach it from, this is why I like using it.
Yes.
Right. There are a lot of rich text editors out there, mm-hmm. and this isn't, you know, a comparison. You know, VS Code versus the others,
mm-hmm.
but you've tried them all, and you kind of like this one.
I do.
So while you're showing us TypeScript in code, if you would give us some ideas as to what you like about it, and don't hesitate to recommend what they should put in it.
Well, I think we can go there, and I've been vocal with Chris and Eric Gamma.
Mm-hmm.
Both guys are wonderful, and what they built is great. About giving feedback.
Mm-hmm.
I've been using it and saying, oh, this is great, but shouldn't we go this direction, and would be awesome if... And some of that stuff's made in the product. Some of the stuff went into User Voice, where you can vote it up. And I encourage everybody to go to the User Voice site.
Yes.
We can show a link later and, you know, vote up your favorite, you know, I wish I had in the VS Code, because this is still a preview.
Yeah. So have you found it fairly stable? I know we're on version 0.92, I think, by now.
I think that's what we're on.
We're getting pretty close. They're updating monthly, which they said they were going to do, and they are.
And they have been very good at that.
Yep. So is it pretty stable at this point?
I've been using it as my go-to editor since middle of May.
Excellent.
So right after we did the Build conference, and they allowed me to help speak with them for a few minutes there about it, I've been using it nonstop. And before that, I was using brackets quite a bit.
Okay.
So one thing we could do is show quickly, you know, I've got code up and running, but let's just open a new instance of code. And I'm on a Mac, just to show you this is cross-platform.
Yep.
So to me, the first thing I had to find was, what's a tool I can use in both Mac and Windows? Because I use both.
Right.
So if I type in code there and open it up, you'll see that this thing's going to open up relatively quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got my new instance here and sitting up there. Actually, I had a bug in my thing. We'll try that again. So, oh, I'm already in it. That's why. No, that was smart, John. Let's try it a different way. Let's go to a new folder. You can actually open it up from any folder you want. Say I'm in my Git folder. I type code dot, and you can see it's going to go open up code
there we go.
For that folder.
And you can have multiple instances open.
You can.
And it's fairly lightweight, so it's not like having multiple Visual Studios open.
Yeah, you can actually see, if we scroll through, I've got that one, I've got this one, I've got that one. I mean, they're all over the place.
Yep.
And it doesn't need a project file.
Right.
So I can point to any folder. Obviously, my Git folder is not a folder. Mm-hmm. It's a folder that has like 30 projects in it. And if I want to close it, I can close just that one, and then I'm looking at my other project right here. And you can open up any file that you'd like. This happens to be TypeScript, for example.
Yep.
But let's say we open up brackets. Let's just open up a competitor. So brackets is relatively quick. It's a little slower to open.
Okay.
I mean, a few seconds.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't want the update right now. And I can use it. Looks pretty similar.
Yeah.
We can open up Sublime. Sublime, that's not Sublime, John. You have to learn how to type to be a developer, by the way.
I hate that.
Sublime is by far the fastest. It's a pure, it's like one level up from Notepad, right?
Right.
Wicked fast. But everything's a plugin through that. Everything that you want to add. We can also WebStorm. This is an older version. It uses Java. If you're looking for, I love WebStorm. I love the people who work there. If you're looking for something to be slow on a Mac, great way to go.
Oh.
Takes way too long for me to load and to operate. But it's much more similar to what Visual Studio Full is like. So that's kind of the landscape. And there's Adam, too.
Yep.
I think I have Adam on here. Let's open that up, too. Adam is also fast. And ironically, Atom and VS Code are built upon the same technology.
Right.
Electron.
Yep.
So they look similar and they feel similar, but they have some key differences. So where do people go these days? Most people are using, like if you want an IDE on Mac or Windows, WebStorm is a great way to go.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little slower to get going, but it's got a lot of features, a lot of buttons. If you want wicked fast, which is what I like, Sublime's the fastest, but to me, Atom and VS Code are the two most productive.
Right. Well, one of the promises of VS Code is to bring some of the editor goodness from Visual Studio into the rich text editor.
And that key is editor, right?
Yes.
Not to bring in the IDE,
right.
But just the editor piece.
Right.
They've done pretty good. Not great yet. There's things they still need.
Mm-hmm.
And I love these guys, but let's be fair. If we come over to like a, let's find a JavaScript file. That's not the right one. There we go. This is pure ES5, looking at a Gulp course I wrote with Angular and JavaScript and Node. And I've got all my JavaScript here, but if I like type in the word Angular, for example, and I do dot, you're seeing a lot of stuff in here, and it's giving me IntelliSense, right?
Mm-hmm.
How does it know that? This is ES5, and everything's a global variable, and there's no types. The way that this one knows about that, and I think we're going to see down here, I've got a typings folder. And a typings folder is where you get those definitions, basically interfaces for, in this case, Angular. You see right there. So in there, we got an Angular typings file, which has got all these modules and interfaces showing, hey, this is your API. So in there, now when I type in, you know, let's go and do, we'll do chaining, do dot controller, and you can see the method signature, and it gives you all sorts of autocomplete. So I can just type tab. I can type that in, and you can see the little 1/3.
Mm-hmm.
I can scroll down to those and see different interfaces for it, which is wicked cool, because if you've ever done JavaScript, you know that one thing that stinks is you could type in, let's say I type this in, I typed in controllers by accident, Yeah. Nothing's telling me I did something wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know what? That might be okay. This would actually create an error, but what if I just did something like, I don't know, I created a variable called foo, set it to 1, and then later I said, okay, goo equals foo plus 1. Mm-hmm. Nothing's going to tell me I did something wrong here besides this editor now, because that's actually a new variable I just created. JavaScript's very flexible.
Right.
I just drove off into the bay. And I might not find this unless I wrote a unit test or I ran the app and happened to run over this code.
So now goo is equal to 1, right? Because foo would be initialized at 0, presumably?
Yeah, this is actually
to be 2.
Undefined plus 1.
Okay. So at runtime, what is goo going to be at then? Then at runtime?
So let's go find out. This is a cool little trick. So here's my Visual Studio course. But let's go inside of the editor here, the developer tools inside of Chrome. You can do this in Edge or anything else you want. But let's take that exact code. Let's find that exact code first. Let's create those two. We'll pass them into here. And foo is not defined, but let's just type in goo. Undefined plus 1 is undefined.
Got it.
So you can actually do things like that and say, hey, you know, what is undefined, if you can type, plus 1. That's not a number. There's some interesting things in JavaScript, by the way. You can do stuff like this. You can say, is that equal to that? That's false. Mm-hmm. There's some interesting things you can do. You can actually test things out. But the nice thing about code is when you're in here, if you're doing ES5 and you use the typings files, it gives you a little bit of a support. Not a ton. It's not going to protect you against everything because it's still ES5.
Right.
But then you could migrate to something like, let's do Angular 1 with TypeScript. In this case, you can see the same app, basically, but instead of just functions, notice I've got a class. So now I've got this dashboard controller, and watch what happens when I hover over dashboard controller. It tells me it's that class, and I hold the command key down. I'm getting a little peek at where is that defined.
Yeah.
Happens to be right here, right now. But let's say I wanted to know where something else is defined, like this app core iData service. If I highlight over that and hold command, I'm actually seeing the definition of that interface right here. So everything I use data service for, for example, let's say I'm in here inside this function, and I type in this dot, what I call it, data service, and I type in things like this, I can actually start referencing the things that are on that data service inside my class. And I've got my logger info, anything else I use, I can actually start getting IntelliSense, autocomplete. And if I want to go look at the data service, I can just highlight it, I can click on it, and go right to that file.
Cool.
So now you're getting one level better in VS Code.
Right.
Now I'm not driving off the bay, but I've got a guardrail that says, hey, here's my APIs, here's what I can do. And the best thing is you can take your, if you've written an app in ES5, take all your ES5 code and just rename the files to .ts and then put it into this tool, because VS Code is written on top of TypeScript. And it will tell you right away, hey, you're using TypeScript files and here's your ES5 code. And all ES5 code is valid TypeScript. But I've done this on large projects and I've instantly found bugs I didn't even know I had. Like ways I was using strings as numbers, and you know JavaScript is very forgiving, but then all of a sudden realizing, oh wow, I actually used this inappropriately, and I need to fix that.
So just by taking your JavaScript and renaming it TS, not literally writing any TypeScript,
exactly,
it's telling you, it's sort of compiling it, I guess.
Yeah, it's taking a look at it. It's not really compiling it, but it's evaluating it.
Evaluating, okay.
Yeah, and it says, hey, you used this as a string, but then you used it later as a number, and that's not what you wanted. A good example of that, and let's just, if you're getting started, if you go out to typescriptlang.org, and we go to play, there's a little playground here. Let's just wipe out what's in there, and let's type in something like, hey, I'm going to create a class. And we'll say it's a class, and it's called customer. And we'll do that. So here we've got our customer class, and we'll give it a first name, and we'll make it a string, like that. And let's go down here, and we'll say var c equals a new customer. Now to do c dot, you see first name.
Yep.
By default, first name is public, so I could do that. Now I can also put the word public in there if I want to be explicit.
Okay.
I don't know about you, I kind of like being explicit because I forget
what
defaults are. But let's say I also did private last name. Not sure why you'd want to do that, but you could. We could say, all right, set that to Robert. And now we do C dot, where's last name? Doesn't exist, right?
Right.
It's like, hello, you've got a problem here. Now, the really cool thing is, if you look on the right-hand side, it still emits that code, and both of those lines of code on the right are valid JavaScript. There is no concept of private or public in JavaScript like this. But TypeScript's saying you intended to use this in this way, and you violated your own agreement.
Right.
So at least you can get a kind of a glimpse at saying, you don't want to do that. And you obviously can fix that by just going up here and change that to public, and everybody's good.
So is this a good way for somebody that knows C# to start learning JavaScript? Because that code on the left looks pretty C#-ish.
Yes, it looks very much like
it. The code on the right looks very JavaScript-ish, because it literally is.
It is. It's a great way to play with it.
Okay.
And they've got pre-written samples in this list. Another thing you can do is, I said it was string up here? Mm-hmm. Let's say I said, you know what? By default, everybody's named Robert. We just do that. Notice down here.
Not enough that there's so many people named Robert Green. Now you're going to name everybody Robert.
Everybody is Robert now.
I can never use R. Green as a user.
I can't get enough of you, man. Neither can your audience. So in here, we've got first name is equal Robert, but I didn't define a type. But because I initialize it to string, notice when I hover, it says, hey, you're a string.
Okay.
So it's actually intuiting what you're actually going to make this type be.
Right.
Because some people, the first turn off they get is, man, I've got a real app, and I don't want to be typing in the type for everything.
Right.
And you don't have to. Let's say I didn't do it for either of these. Watch this. Ah. Let's not watch that. Let's watch this. So here we've got Robert in first name. It's a string. Let's make him public just so we can see him and hover over him. Now, when I do this, I use C.lastname. Notice the type is any.
Any, yep.
So I can set that to one.
Mm-hmm.
Or anything else. If you don't give it a type, its default type is any. It's kind of like a variant, you know?
Yeah.
So saying, hey, it's whatever you want it to be. And I could do that, and then I could do this, too. Equals green. I've defined it to be whatever I want it to be. And JavaScript lets you do that.
Right.
But this is a way of saying, you know what? I've got some code that I don't necessarily want to dictate how it's going to work. I just want you to allow any value. And therefore, you can just do that, or you can type in the type of any, like that.
Okay.
So this stuff's great.
In that case, that's redundant.
It's completely redundant.
Right.
And there's a thing called implicit any, which you can work with. Like, if you compile your TypeScript and you want to make sure that everybody actually defined the type that they are, you can set the compiler option and say, no implicit any.
Okay.
And that will check to make sure everything's at least had an assigned type. And the only reason you'd want to do that is you might want to not have any unintentional consequences in your code.
Right.
So if you want to be overly strict, that's kind of a way to do it. When you're starting out.
It's hilarious that that's considered overly
strict.
Yeah,
like actually knowing what your types are. But imagine you take like 10,000 lines of JavaScript and it was ES5.
Yeah.
And you just want to use it. Mm-hmm. You'd probably want to turn that off immediately because there were no types.
Okay.
And then maybe slowly work them in.
Right.
So this is a great way to get started with TypeScript. And then once you get there, this is kind of getting over to Angular 2 now.
Mm-hmm.
In Angular 2...
Which is written in TypeScript, is that correct?
It's written in TypeScript. That's the amazing part,
yeah.
Isn't it? The Angular team... Wait a minute, hold on. World's colliding? Angular team working with Microsoft.
Yeah, I know. And Angular is a product of whom?
Google.
Okay, then.
Yeah, so these guys are working together, and this kind of came about because the Angular team was starting to create their own language, AtScript, and it was similar to TypeScript, but not all-inclusive. Some people say it was a subset. It really wasn't. It was kind of an overlap. And then they talked to the TypeScript team and said, hey, let's just get what we want into there. Google's good at making framework, Angular. Microsoft's really good at making languages, TypeScript, C#. Now they both do what they do best, and they came together. And we end up with a great environment now where I can hover over this stuff and say, there's an attribute, by the way, in JavaScript. And I can say, what is this component thing? Hover over it, tells me all the properties. And see how it says direct as ?
Yep.
It means it's optional, so I don't have to specify it. It also tells me the types that are in there. Like if I just typed, let's say, the actual type there, that's still an array, it's okay. But if I typed in a string, like we'll put Robert in there again, it's telling me now you did something wrong, something's wrong with you. I can hover over it, and it tells me right there what's wrong.
Okay.
So what's the main value? Get back to our original theme of VS Code. Have you ever been coding and you just wished in JavaScript, for example, or whatever you're typing on the web, that if you made a mistake, the editor would tell you before you ran or before you went live and you were with your family somewhere and you get a call in the middle of the night?
Mm-hmm.
that's where this comes in, because VS Code, unlike other editors, has TypeScript baked in.
Right.
So you don't have to add a plugin or anything. You immediately open up, download VS Code, takes 10 seconds, open it up, point it at a folder, look at your file, in less than a minute you can see, oh wait, Robert's not a valid value.
Right.
You know, that's got to be an array. And then everybody's happy. Yeah. And, you know, we're good to go. So we can type in our values as we go. Let me go back to what we had. This is where Git comes in handy. And it gives you a nice place to start, and immediately you're getting all this tooling help.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the biggest thing I found after working on very large JavaScript projects with dozens, if not more, developers, is you can't monitor everything.
Right.
And there's only so much tooling and CI can do for you. But if you have a way where all your editors and that your developers are using can help them self-monitor, and that's where VS Code to me shined above some of the other tools. The second way was the debugging, which to me, you know, wicked fast, and I can step through my code and see a ton of values.
Show us some debugging if you can.
I certainly can. Let's see. Let's get out of this one.
Do you set breakpoints with conditions and actions and all that stuff we're used to?
Yes. And let's get out of there. Which one would you like to debug?
Is there a way to turn autosave on, by the way?
Oh, yeah. I leave it on all the time. File, autosave. This is on the Mac.
Is that on by default?
No.
That would explain it.
And if you go to Command-Shift-P on a Mac.
Because I was in Googs' demo at Dev Intersection last week, I showed VS Code on the Mac. And the idea is, you know, you got a big team together building the My Shuttle app, this giant thing. And, you know, we're doing it as a hackathon. So the C# XAML guys show up at the hackathon. Oh, go use the Xamarin tools to build this app. This is the app that's used by people requesting a ride. Oh, a bunch of guys show up with JavaScript and HTML. Oh, use the Cordova tools to build this other app, which is what the drivers use.
Mm-hmm.
One guy shows up and says, well, I don't run Visual Studio and I don't have Windows. All I got is a Mac. Well, fine, use Visual Studio Code. Right.
Yep.
So I pop into Visual Studio Code, make a change to the code, build, run, and
nothing
shows up because I forgot to save the file, because I'm not used to having to save the file in between typing and build.
Well, you know how you can easily tell that too, because this bit me for a while. Let's say...
Well, it tells you right there. It says one, yes. But who looks at that?
So right here, I've got a file, and let's say I turn off autosave. Let's say I didn't know that. Now it's off. Now I make something in here, and I just type in hello, comments, whatever. Mm-hmm. Notice it says unsaved.
Yes, I know.
And it gives me the dot, right?
I know.
But if I turn this on, I no longer get those dots or unsaves. But I asked, you know, why isn't this default? And they had a good answer. So what Chris told me was that
because people Robert wanted it that way.
Robert, we wanted to screw Robert up on stage. They succeeded.
Well, I practiced so many times that I did not forget to save on stage. I'll have you know.
What's nice about it is I like how it automatically saves it, so when you can run, you have watchers, it'll rerun your tests. But that's the exact reason they said they didn't do it. Because if you're running like automated tests that watch your files when they're saved, if you're constantly typing, it's constantly saving, your tests are constantly running in the background, too.
Okay.
So they wanted people to opt into that.
Okay.
I like that behavior, but if you don't want that behavior, it's not going to force it on you.
Got it.
So I get it.
Fair enough.
And it's nice that you get to choose how you roll. So let's say we're back in...
Usually when you have a... I find that when I have a question like that, you say, why is it this way? It turns out that there actually is a reason for it. It may not, you know...
You may not agree.
You can't argue with it, right? You can say, oh, okay, fine.
Yes.
Now I know that I have to turn it on and that there's a reason. It's not just like somebody forgot or the guy who's going to turn that on was sick that day.
That's great. Hey, Chris, why did that work that way? Well, John, the autosave man, he was out sick that day, and it just didn't make it into the product.
He was going to do that. He was sick that day, and nobody picked it up. No, there's usually a reason.
We dropped the ball here, Microsoft. What did you want to see? Debugging, right?
Yes.
Debugging. You're cracking me up.
But we digress.
So let's say we're in that same project. This was the, ES5 project I was looking at. And here I'm going to run the server. And let's say I'm running it through Node. Mm-hmm. And I can run it with --debug-break. That means turn on debugging symbols, basically, for Node. And by the way, the position of that's important. I do this a lot. When you run debugging symbols in Node, it's got to be before the file name.
Okay.
Otherwise, it just ignores it. So if you do that, it says, hey, turn on debug symbols, run this app.js file. It's a node server. And as soon as I do that, notice the first thing it does, say, I'm listening on this port. It's not running the server yet. It's kind of like, I'm about to. So it's like, I'm about to run it. It's waiting because I did the dot, the dash BRK. That means break on the first line of code.
Oh, got it.
So it's waiting for me to do actually attach a debugger. Now, if I go find which editor I was in, I think it was the gulp patterns. Yep, right here. Let's go into app.js on the server, and let's set a breakpoint, let's say right there. Look good to you. We'll go to this little squash debug over here. Click on him. Now, if you don't see attach in your VS Code, that's because it's reading a file, which you can click on this little gear for right here. And you'll see that file is a launch.json. The launch.json automatically puts in this attach. And let's do this from scratch. Let's delete launch.json. And we can collectively gasp, no! Now notice I have no file up there.
Yes.
I have no options. I hit configure. It automatically generates the basic debugging file.
Okay.
So I can attach on port 5858. Notice that's the port I was listening on.
Right.
So I go back. Really, I go back. There it is. Now I can hit attach, hit run, and immediately it broke on the first line.
First.
Didn't even need the breakpoint.
Yep.
Now I can step over. I can step in, step out. Let's just jump down a few. And we'll go down to the breakpoint, or I could hit run to that point. Now you can see your call stack in here. You see your breakpoints. You can disable them. You get watches. Let's say I wanted to monitor the environments. I can right-click on that, add the watch. Boom. It's undefined right now. I can jump over it. It's still undefined because it didn't actually pass in this value.
Do we have conditional breakpoints and actions?
Not
and
yet.
All? Not yet, but that's...
It's coming,
some of those
yes.
things might be coming. We don't have IntelliTrace or anything like that.
No, and I doubt we'll see IntelliTrace here.
That's probably a bit heavy for this.
But I think conditional breakpoints are a great feature. You know, only break on this if this case happened. I find the watch is valuable. I also find the locals valuable because you can dive into things. So let's just minimize those. I can jump into this guy, look at functions, prototypes.
It's going to be interesting over time to watch how much of what's in Visual Studio makes it into Visual Studio Code, how much is asked for, not only by people who are used to Visual Studio, but by people who aren't used to it. And, you know, obviously, you need to have a difference between your big fat IDE designed for people like me who like big fat IDEs and your lightweight rich text editors. So you can't just take everything that's in the big fat IDE and stick it in here and create another big fat IDE.
I don't think you'd want to, right?
No, right. You wouldn't want to. But it'll be interesting to see, you know...
Where's that balance?
Where's the balance and how is it maintained?
Well, I think the
and
key...
And do you wind up with, I don't know, do you wind up with, like, different... The ability to have different versions, right? Visual Studio Code... I'm just making stuff up here. Lightweight Visual Studio Code.
No, you're inventing it.
More heavyweight.
I think it's an interesting conundrum, and I think the plus side of the name is that Visual Studio is a strong name, right? So it's Visual Studio Code. The downside is some people who know Visual Studio kind of feel like this is Visual Studio for the Mac, which it's not.
Right.
It's a wicked fast editor that works in both platforms, actually in Linux too.
Yes.
And an idea of that is, look at, check this out. Let's go up to Visual Studio Code, which I already opened here, and let's go to the main site. Let's download it for OS X, and look at that. I'm downloaded.
I did this at Build in the keynote on Wi-Fi at Moscone, downloaded it and installed it, and it took less than 2 minutes.
It's crazy. Expanded. It's 177 meg, and it's like 62 compressed. So it's amazingly fast. And how big is Visual Studio now?
Bigger.
Just a little bit, right?
Bigger,
You know, and that's not a bad thing at all, but I think what this is they're complementary. If I need the full guided experience, I go to Visual Studio. If I need wicked fast, and most of my day, I spend 90%
Visual Studio has done a much better job of, in setup, giving you the ability to ask for
things or
turn them off. Yeah, so...
And while in there, you've got buttons and wizards and GUIs.
Yes.
Here, like, if I want to change my tasks, you know, you saw... I set a JSON file. Well, what if you, let's say somebody came in and deleted this on you, right? Oh my gosh, what do you do? Well, when I type in comma and I do control space, I got IntelliSense and autocomplete saying these are the valid options. I type in source maps, and it gives me the value of true. I mean, it tells me everything that I want, and it protects me from saying, what if I typed that by accident, you know? Now you come up with your IntelliSense, ooh, wait, you forgot that, dude.
Okay.
So even JSON has schema.
Right.
So instead of a GUI, it's configuration with JSON.
Right.
And I think we can also do this. Let's go back to what we were editing. And let's run to the cursor. We'll come down to line 26. And I can step into another file. And if I want to, I can open a separate window over there, go side by side. And I can show on the right-hand side is app.js, where I came from on line 26. The left-hand side, line 384, it's actually where I'm jumping into the Node module framework. It's actually trying to go find the, whatever it is here, routes index file. And then I can just jump over that one, jump over, and it comes back. So you can actually step in and out of files on here. Immensely helpful. And then I can just let it run through. And now if I actually go to the local host on this guy, and I try to hit slash ping, it'll actually break into here again, and I can walk through it all over the place.
Cool.
And this is coming to ASP.NET 5 as well, with VS Code. So you can debug Node, and you can debug, you will be able to debug ASP.NET 5 on the server.
And you currently can't?
Currently cannot.
Okay.
Chris could give you more details on the whys. The best I can guess, and this is just me guessing, is that it's not released yet, right? ASP.NET 5 is still in beta 8,
I believe, is the current one.
Coming soon.
As of this moment, yeah.
But they have to get all the debugging
RC
and hook
coming
into that.
Later this month.
I believe so.
Public schedule.
You definitely would know more than I would.
I actually did look at the page this morning.
I think it's November, which
yes,
is later
November,
this month. Yeah.
Which is this month, it turns out.
Oh, my gosh.
And then GA in first quarter of next year, or RTM, or GA, I don't know, whatever we call things these days.
RTW, release to web.
RTW, yeah. RTM. I think they're calling it RTM.
Something. You're going to be able to get it and go live.
So although, you know, what does release to manufacturing mean anymore, right?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, we get a lot of great stuff in here. We get JavaScript, TypeScript, ES5, ES6, Angular 2. And if you go check out, like, here's an Angular 2 tutorial I wrote on the Angular site. They actually show you can write the stuff in TypeScript, JavaScript, whatever you want.
How long do you think it takes to learn Angular?
To learn Angular? One or two.
All right, we'll go in order. So if you are, I mean, it's a framework. Right?
Yes.
It's a framework similar to how MVVM and MVC are frameworks? Is that a true statement?
It models after MVSTAR, yes.
Okay.
So if you know MVSTAR, whether it's MVVM, MVC, MVP, following how Angular is designed, one or two, is relatively straightforward.
Okay.
The syntax, people get all up in arms about syntax. Syntax, you learn it and you're done. It's not hard in any way. The thing for me with Angular is it's very simple learning curve to get going with like 90% of what you need.
Mm-hmm.
That last 10% is hard, to be honest with you. People tend to focus on what's hard, but you can write, I can teach you everything you need to know about Angular in less than an hour.
Okay.
And if you really want to go there, Dan Wallin has got a great YouTube video, Angular in 60-ish minutes.
That's
like 67. That's a little more than an hour. But you can learn everything you need to know about 90% of your applications right there.
Oh, okay, cool, all right.
Angular 2, they're gaming to make it that simple. It's not quite released yet either, like ASP.NET. But they're asking me and others to help write tutorials like this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're doing these little simple things, like, you know, I'm a storyteller. You know, once upon a time, you're writing an app, you know, and it's called your Heroes app. You know, and it gives you examples of how to get started and what your first class looks like.
Okay.
But instead of MVC, they're calling it components. So your component, think of a component as the view in MVC, the V, and also your C, your controller.
So a component is the view and the controller?
Kind of, yeah, because really what it is, it's a component.
So how do you get separation of concerns
good.
If your controllers are equal V and C together?
So here's a great example. Let's say we get this dashboard component. In here, this is the component itself, starting in line 13.
Mm-hmm.
That's the class, that's my controller. That's where all my JavaScript or TypeScript goes. But I need a view. This thing needs a view to show. So the view is your template or your HTML. What we do is we decorate the component with a, this is like square brackets in C sharp.
Yep.
Say, hey, there's metadata about this component. And the thing that's going to define its view, this template, is over in this file. So the component knows about the template. It's not really containing the template. It's associated with the template.
Okay.
So think of it as like a marriage counselor.
So the but the code in the component doesn't know about the code in the view. It just knows that it's associated with a view
right.
that is expecting the component to return the things
certain properties or attributes.
Expecting. Okay, so yes. you still have separation of concerns.
You do, although if we looked at the one I just showed, you'll notice this component, which is very small, it's got a title and routes, it has its template defined in line. And here, we've got HTML right in our TS file, and I'm using a TypeScript or ES6 feature called called backticks. It's called template strings, which you use with a backtick. So you can do multi-line strings, so you can avoid doing, let's use quotes for a minute. If I did quotes, it's all upset, right?
Yeah.
So here I'd have to do, okay, do a quote, quote with a plus.
Right.
Oh my gosh, you know. Yeah. Then you have to escape the quotes. And so this is template strings. Well, I think, now this is a feature I've asked for in VS Code, they're going to get to a point now where, let's say I'm in an HTML file, and I want to type in a div that's got a UL that has five items. Mm-hmm. I can type div that contains an UL that contains an LI five times. And I do that and hit tab, and that's in VS Code for HTML. They're going to get to the point where those features, which don't currently work in this file...
That would be a code snippet, if you will.
Yeah.
Right?
It's a thing called emmet, which they bake in, but you could write a code snippet to do that. But it'd be nice if you'll have all that great syntax and tooling here, so that when we start typing HTML in our TypeScript files...
So you put that in your component.
Yeah, my rule is always a bit small.
Okay.
Like this one here, creating a file for three lines is like, you know, what's the real big deal?
Right.
If it gets too lengthy, I'd get it out of here.
Got it.
But I like putting in an HTML file simply because it'll tell me if I screwed up like an end tag, you know, or it'll tell me if I added too many things, and I kind of like an editor to do that. But yeah, so if you're learning Angular 2, we got the M, the V, and the C. The view is like your HTML. The C, the controller is now just a component.
Mm-hmm.
And the model's the same thing.
The
it's always
the model.
Model's
the
model, right?
Yeah.
The model's you.
Exactly.
So, Robert the Model Green. I don't think either one of these are difficult to get going with, to build apps with. I think the hardest part is how do you build them well, which just takes experience,
right? Yeah.
So we've looked at quite a bit, and to me, coming back full circle is, you asked me why this tool. I code fast. I'm a heavy keyboard intensive coder now. I didn't used to be.
Right.
Notice there's no mouse. And it's helped me get the thoughts out of my head onto the page faster. So when I'm typing Angular or React or just plain old JavaScript, I can type, move, everything's a keystroke. I am very efficient, very productive, and I don't lose. I don't have to give up like debugging or autocomplete or IntelliSense or go to definition or all the things you love.
Have you become more productive since moving to just typing?
From typing from an IDE?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Interesting. Okay.
I mean, when I make mistakes, which I do a lot, I know immediately, and I don't have to wait. I don't press F5 anymore, by the way, which you can. But when you press F5 in Visual Studio, it's often get a cup of coffee, come back, and realize, oh, man, I forgot this one character over here, or, and keep going. Mm-hmm. With this one, I've got it worked out. If we have a moment, I can show you.
Absolutely.
Imagine we're running, let's kill that, and let's say I'm in here and I want to run this gulp patterns guy. I've got this process called gulp serve dev. It's going to serve up my code into a local browser, and I can paste that over on the left-hand side, and you see that over here. Now let me go find my editor for gulp patterns. Let's close the other ones, because that'll make life easier. I think I closed too much. Ah, here you are. And we'll bring you up to this screen. I put him on the right. We'll open up, let's say, dashboard controller. And notice I've got this logger down here. This is activated dashboard view. Well, let's first just refresh over here.
I do want to mention that we now have Mr. Ward Bell on the show.
We do, yes, with his name Clint Barton.
Mm-hmm.
My Avengers.
Can't get him in person, but I got a picture of him.
We should show people your locker. All the pictures of Ward you have hanging up. Sorry, Robert. But let's say I changed something over here and I said teasing Robert.
That's actually not a bad idea.
And would I change
to
that?
To collect pictures of Ward.
And let's say every time I change this guy, and it's auto-saving, it automatically picks it up, mm-hmm. immediately represents it on the right-hand side, so I can see instantly what I'm doing right or wrong as okay. I'm going through. And let's say that I don't want to do that. Let's say I want to go over to my less file, which I'm using for CSS, yep. and see this orange. Let's say Robert doesn't like orange. What color do you like?
I did like purple, but let's do a nice red.
Red. I typed in red, it's going to save, mm-hmm. and look how it injects, changes, moves along what it's going to do. This makes it super easy to make changes, see what they're going on.
Yeah.
So this kind of an experience works really well, and VS Code makes it lightning fast for me to be able to kind of go back and forth.
Cool. Very cool. Awesome.
So use it.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's free, right?
It is free, and it's cross-platform.
Cross-platform, free.
It's fast.
I've been seeing people start to use this without me even telling them. We have, at my place where I work, we literally have like a 12 or more editors that people use. Mm-hmm. IntelliJ, WebStorm, VS Code, Atom, Brackets, Vim, TextMate, everything. Even Eclipse.
Yep.
So you've got all these things, and people are gravitating more towards things like VS Code or Atom because of how fast and productive mm-hmm. you can be.
Cool. Awesome.
Well,
thanks
for
coming
for
on the show.
I appreciate this.
All
thanks
right.
for letting me tease you.
Always. We'll see you next time on Visual Studio Toolbox.